I am the first female to solo Colorado's 14ers. There's 58 of those. I have also soloed the Centennials. Those are the 100 highest peaks in Colorado. And I have over 600 peaks above 13,000 feet that I've soloed. And if I added up all the peaks I've done, it's in the thousands.
Welcome to Going In Blind. I'm your host, Zach Tidwell. And today I'm speaking with a mountaineer who has summited hundreds of peaks around the world. He was also the first female to solo all 58 of Colorado's 14ers. Please welcome the wild wanderer, Laura Clark. And to everyone at home, thank you for listening. Please take a second to help me grow the show so that I can keep delivering these conversations week after week for years to come. Subscribe, rate, and review the show in whatever podcasting app you're using right now. And check out the show notes to follow me on social media and YouTube as well. When you share your favorite episodes, tag me and use the hashtag GoingInBlind. You can also join my mailing list at ZachTidwell.net. And if you know someone you think I should talk to, have them send me an email at contact.goinginblind@gmail.com. All right, Laura, I've been waiting for this one for a while for people at home. Sweet, sweet boy, Dave Murphy, who's been on the show before, connected you and I a hot minute ago. But I feel like with everything, you know, being on the cusp of World War III right now, taking a step back to talk about just some wholesome but very impressive things that you're doing is going to be a nice little break for everybody. So if before we dive into the actual story side of this, can you just kind of tell everyone your accolades here so they know who we're dealing with?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm mom. So I've got five kids between the ages of 22 and 26. That's my claim to fame. I've got five great kids, all doing their own wonderful different thing. I'm a Girl Scout leader. Love that. Empty nester, obviously, because my kids are older. And I am the first female to solo Colorado's 14ers. There's 58 of those. I have also soloed the Centennials. Those are the 100 highest peaks in Colorado. And I have over 600 peaks above 13,000 feet that I've soloed. And when I say solo, that means I went by myself to do it. Sometimes ropes are involved, sometimes they're not. And if I do a peak for the first time, it's always by myself. So if I added up all the peaks I've done, it's in the thousands because I'll guide people or take groups and stuff like that. But over 600 peaks above 13,000 feet solo.
That is so insane. And I had never heard of a 14er until we moved to Colorado in high school. And so for people who aren't from this area, a 14er is a summit of war. You know, if we get into talking about 13ers and stuff later on too, that is the peak is above that, you know, above 14,000 feet or 13,000 feet above sea level. And also to put this that same thing into context for people, I've only done one 14er before. It was when I was in high school. And at the time I was running cross country and it's pretty solid runner. And this is at elevation because I lived in the Front Range. I was running my mile and like, I think it was around 440 and my 5K around 16 and a half minutes. But on a 14er, especially once you start getting up above the tree line, it was just, even I felt fat and out of shape. I mean, it's a couple steps and then you're huffing and puffing for air, and then a couple steps and you're huffing and puffing for air. And it was just, I don't think people really have a true respect for the impact of elevation on your ability to breathe, especially when you're exercising, unless you've really been in it. But so all of that is freaking insane. But I mean, you said you're a Girl Scout leader. Is that what started all of this? Was you taking your daughters? Were you a scout growing up?
Oh, I absolutely was. And I just have to say, you described that perfectly, exactly how it feels to be hiking above tree line. You are really just counting kind of 10 steps before I can stop for a minute to breathe, because that's exactly what it is.
And you'd mentioned you're a scout leader. Is that how you initially got into this? Were you a scout growing up?
Yeah, I was absolutely a scout growing up. It kind of ran in my family. We loved scouting. When I was younger, I started when I was six. And my mom didn't have a lot of money, but she always found a way to get me to scout camp. She found a way to make enough money so that I could go during the summers. And the camp that I went to was off the PCT, and we had a nice hike that we could do. It was obviously not something that was required, but we could sign up for it. And I signed up for it every single year because it was amazing. It was fun. It was hot. It was dusty. It was dirty. But I loved being at the front of the line. I loved getting to the top of that peak and looking down at all the campers below because we could see our camp below and seeing all those people that decided to like swim in the pool instead of go up on this hike. And I'm like, I just got this great hike and I'm looking down on you and I'm watching this. And man, you guys must be so upset you stayed to play in the pool. Like, and that sounds kind of funny, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I loved Girl Scout camp growing up. And I had kids very young and decided I wanted them to be in Girl Scouts because it meant so much to me. What I got out of outdoor education and teamwork and building friends and just lifelong skills meant a lot to me. So as a leader, I would do whatever my girls wanted to do, as long as it was safe and legal, right? Like whatever they wanted to do. And when they were about between middle school and high school, I had several troops of girls, but this troop wanted to climb Pikes Peak and they wanted to make it a backpacking trip. And Pikes Peak is 26 miles round trip and about 7,500 feet of elevation gain. And I'm like, yeah, let's do this. We've already competed in outdoor survival competitions and you guys know how to backpack and let's do it. And this is in August, okay? August, I want to say, is 24th. We get up there, we have a successful summit, we come back down. And mountains make their own weather. We ended up getting 6 inches of snow that night, which isn't normal for August, but since mountains make their own weather, freak storms come in and you get snow. Those girls ended up saving seven people's lives that night. Just people walking in completely unprepared. They weren't prepared to stay on the mountain overnight. They were wearing sandals. They had altitude sickness. They were hypothermic, all this different stuff. And it was really, really meaningful for them. Was very meaningful for me because all the skills that I had been teaching them, they got to use in a real life situation. They ended up winning, not winning, but earning the Spirit of the Springs Award, which is a very high honor in Colorado Springs, Red Cross Hometown Hero of the Year Award. They were in several magazines. It changed their life. It gave them the perspective that, yeah, I can use the skills I've learned and save people. And they did. Now, that's a long way of saying I loved this hike. I absolutely loved it. So I worked Monday through Thursday. I had Fridays off and my kids were in school. So I would end up doing this hike, this 26 mile, 7,500 foot of elevation gain hike in about 7.5 hours. I would do it every Friday. And I
That's
loved it.
cooking.
Loved it. I did it several dozen times. And one time I'm coming down and somebody says to me, oh, so what other 14ers have you done? And I looked at him and I said, what's a 14er? I had no idea what a 14er was. I didn't realize there were 58 of them in Colorado, let alone more throughout the United States. And I was just hooked. I'm like, oh, I can do more than just one. I can do a different route every time and see different things, meet different people, different wildlife, animals, all that stuff. And I got hooked. I finished all 58 14ers in 13 months. Just
That is
loving
insane.
it.
At that point, what were your Monday through Thursday? What were you doing for work?
Oh, I work full time. I am VP of marketing for a software company. And I have been for a very since 2011, for a very long time. And I used to have Fridays off to volunteer in my kids' classrooms. But when they got to middle school, they didn't really like that anymore. That wasn't a cool
Yeah, they're
thing
like,
for
stay
them,
away
for
from me,
me to be room
Mom.
mom. I'm already their Girl Scout leader. I'm already band mom. I'm already, merit badge counselor for Boy Scouts. They're like, Mom, if you could not be at school with us, that would be fantastic. So yeah, I took the one day I really kind of had off when they were in school and applied that to hiking.
That is so nuts. And it's, I obviously, with everything that you've done, I had like that those pantsuit vibes, right? I'm like, all right, this lady's out there kicking ass. But then you're like, yeah, during the day, I'm VP of marketing. That also checks out. That's so crazy though. I think most people, and myself included, you would picture that as someone who's, you've got a desk jockey who's, might be active, but is, it sounds like almost what you were doing on the mountains, or I was gonna say on the mountain, but on mountains became another full-time job.
It became an obsession, an addiction, actually. I love climbing the same peak over and over again, but I also love the next peak. I have people ask me all the time, what is your favorite peak? And it's always the next one I'm doing. There's always a different experience, and I crave that different experience. What am I going to see this time? What is the route? Will I need ropes? Am I going to be scrambling or rock climbing? And that it's kind of a high for me.
Is when you're doing the same ones over and over, is it like a PR thing?
I usually, if I do them over again, it's either because I'm training, like say the conditions just aren't right for me to hit something new, avalanche danger or something like that. So I'll do a peak I've already done just for training purposes to keep my body in shape. And I get a lot of people that are like, hey, I have a group that wants to go. Would you take us? So I've taken Girl Scouts several times because Girl Scouts has this great place in my heart. And if a troop asks me to take them, I'm absolutely taking them. I'm a Girl Scout leader, background checked, wilderness first aid trained. I teach wilderness first responder first aid. Like I teach that stuff. I've taken executive women from all over the world on 14ers that just want to do it. So those are where I've done them over and over again. Or just a friend that's like, I'm scared to do this by myself. Would you go with me? I'm like, yeah, let's go. We'll
Do a
have
lot of
fun.
these peaks have more mountaineering-esque routes as opposed to hiking routes that are for people like you who just do them all the time and want something harder? Or is it just kind of dependent on a mountain?
It is mountain dependent. I can tell you that in Colorado, our 14ers, they're all class four or below. So just to make this really quick, we have in Colorado, it's kind of different than other states. We have five classes of peaks. A class one is like a walking trail. There's a full trail all the way to the top. A class two trail might have cairns that you have to kind of visually see where it is that you need to go. And there's no trail, but if you're looking for cairns, you can find your way up. Class three is scrambling. So you've got 3 points of contact, usually 2 feet in a hand or 2 hands and a foot as you're getting over rocks. Class four is a little more difficult. You've got 4 points of contact, all your hands and feet pretty much all the time, unless you're reaching or stepping. And class five needs ropes. And there are no class five peaks that are 14ers in Colorado. There's a handful that are 13ers. There's probably 10 that you need ropes for that are 13ers. And there's 584 13ers in Colorado. So that's
Oh my
not a
gosh.
lot. It's not a lot. But there are some technical routes. And class four for somebody like me who's short is really almost class five because a lot of these routes were written for and by men who were over 6 feet tall. So they're just like, oh, you just reach up here, you see this handhold, and I'm looking like, that's a good 8 inches away from where I can reach. I need a little more help to get up this. Like it's a little harder. But yeah, we don't have a lot of technical peaks in Colorado that are over 13,000 feet. We do have other ones that are lower that definitely require ropes and stuff like that, but probably around 10, I would say.
Do you rock climb at all?
You know what? I did not rock climb until I made it a goal of finishing the Centennials in Colorado. And there are several peaks that you have to rock climb to do. You have to know ropes. At the least, you have to rappel, and you've got to set up an anchor and be able to rappel off them. And since I wanted to do all these solo, that was kind of my goal. I had to learn, right? Like, because I didn't have those skills. I've been one time when I was 12 at Girl Scout camp, but that doesn't mean I can set up ropes and harnesses and anchors and all that stuff and feel okay descending 175 feet over a cliff with what I have done. So I actually joined a climbing gym, and my son was in Boy Scouts at the time, and his Boy Scout meeting was right next to a climbing gym. And this was a point, kind of like I said earlier, where he's like, Mom, don't be here all the time. So at the very beginning, I would spend an hour at the climbing gym, And then I come back, I'd have chalk all over me, and I'd be a merit badge counselor for the second half of the meeting. So at least he could have some time with his buddies where I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But I learned so much. The climbing community was so nice. I went in there just soloing stuff, and I had people that are like, hey, you want us to help you with that? And I was like, absolutely. Please show me how to do this. I would love to learn how to do this. And they kind of showed me the ropes, if you will. Like, they showed me how to use them, how to tie anchors. I met people that are like, hey, let's just go out for a weekend and we'll go out in the middle of nowhere and I'll teach you how to put an anchor up and we can practice rappelling on short areas and then you can get good at the knots and we can work on higher areas. And I took advantage of that. I am an introvert and that was way outside of my comfort zone. I don't ask for help. I just don't. I figure it out on my own. But there were some things that I needed somebody else there to say yes or no. Like, yeah, you did that right, or no, you didn't. Because when you go over that wall, that's it. You got to trust that you did it right. And that's really hard to do in the beginning when you don't know. And that wasn't a passion of mine. If rock climbing was a passion, yeah, I probably could have figured that out. But it was really a means to an end. It was, I want to do these peaks. In order to do these peaks, I got to be able to rock climb. What do I got to do to be able to rock climb?
That's why I was asking, because you mentioned some of these routes being like, hey, no, this is for me, this is the class four, because I'm short. I see that all the time at rock climbing gyms. So where you're like, okay, this route is way harder than it's rated because I'm only 5'7" and I can't reach where the, you know, the 6'2"
yes
dude
yeah.
can. But that's, I guess I didn't even think about the rappelling fact of that. And I know you had mentioned soloing and it didn't register until we were just talking now, I guess, because I didn't realize that rappelling and legitimate climbing would be a part of these 14ers. That's sketchy that you're out there by yourself.
It is. It absolutely is. So you've got to trust your skills. I have turned back so many times from things that I'm like, I don't have those skills yet. I don't. I know what I need, but looking at this, I can't do it. And I go back to the climbing gym and I'd ask people and I'd get training and I'd build up my skills. And then it became easier. I'm like, okay, now I got this. At this point, I've got several hundred peaks under my belt. I mean, there's 584 13ers and I've got about 80 left to go to finish them. I can really look at my skills and go, I've learned that along the way. But not right away. I had to go back and practice. I've turned back on more peaks than most people have climbed in their lives just because I'm like, nope, that's not in my skill set. I got to go back. I have promised my family, my kids, that I won't die. So in order to keep that promise, I can't take unnecessary risks. I can take calculated risks. I can say, hey, no, I've trained for this. I know I have the skills. But if I get to a place and I go, that's too sketchy for me, I go back and I practice until it's not sketchy anymore.
How often do you feel like that happens? Like, do you think it's 10% of the time, less?
10% is probably a good number, especially early season. Like just last week, I turned around from something. I had one ice axe and not two. And I get to a place and I'm like, could I do it with one? Probably. Like, but there's a 25% chance I can't. Is that a risk I'm willing to take? And for my family, no. I want to be in the 95% range. So I went back to my truck. I'd already done 95% of the hike, but I realized it was a two ice axe equation, not a one ice axe equation. Went back, spent the night, because with the snow, you've got to let it harden overnight. So if I hiked back the 5 miles to my truck and got the second ice axe, it wouldn't have been the appropriate conditions to climb. It would have been mashed potato snow and the ice axes wouldn't have mattered. And spent the night at the trailhead. Next morning, came back and did it with two ice axes because that was the safe way to do it.
And
so that was a turnaround.
If you didn't have that level of, I guess, the discipline there to cut yourself off instead of like, hey, I'm already at the top, I'm just going to finish this, you might not be here to have accomplished all these summits that you have. And that for people at home, also, you're calling in from your truck at a trailhead right now. Like, you are absolutely an addict.
Yes. Yeah. Especially this time of year. Until the middle of October, I'm living out of the back of my truck and going to trailhead and hitting as many peaks as I can. I'm trying to finish the 13ers. I'm pretty close as far as I'm concerned to being done. And it's just a weather window now and waiting for things to melt out so I can actually access these peaks. And while that doesn't, like, I can climb peaks in snow, but when the place I start is 25 miles from the trailhead and that road is closed, I have to wait until I can actually drive the 25 miles so I can hike another 25 miles to base camp to actually climb the peak. And I'm going absolutely crazy right now because everything I have left looks like that. I cannot get to the trailhead. So I'm itching all over and yes, turning back hurts and it's hard, but it is always the right decision. It's always the right decision to stop and say, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know enough or the conditions aren't right. I can turn around and come back tomorrow. It'll be there. This problem will be there tomorrow and I can solve it tomorrow. It's not worth my life.
Well, that's, you know, as humans, we tend to lean into that sunk cost fallacy where it's like, all right, well, but I've already invested this much. I've already tortured myself and come 24 miles to get to this spot and, you know, ascended over a mile at
elevation.
Oh
my goodness.
Now, that's, I don't know. I feel like this is a great example. Go ahead.
I have to tell you, there are several very difficult peaks that I've done that required ropes that were less than 50 miles round trip, not including the summit. So we're looking at like about 60 miles round trip on these hikes, where I'm looking at about 30,000 feet of elevation gain total that took me 3 or 4 attempts in order to do. These are weekend backpacking trips to get to base camp, to go up there, to realize I don't have the skills and come back and think I have the skills and do it again the next weekend and get up and go, no, I don't have the skills and have to go back. And the next year, go back and try it again and still don't have it. But when you finally get it, it's amazing. And you're still there. You're still there to prove that, you know what, the mountain's always there. There'll be a way. And I'm still here to be a mom.
And
I didn't die taking a choice that was bad. I didn't make a bad decision just because, oh, maybe I can do this. No, I can't do it. I'm not there yet. I think I am. Maybe. And then I get there. Nope. Go back. Train more. Do it again. And that takes a lot of mental acuity. You have to. That's hard. Do you know how hard that is to turn back 4 times on a peak that's over 50 miles round trip?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, where I think that's a great example of women being more intelligent than men. Because like most dudes would be like, nah, fuck it. I'm here. Let's do it. Let's do it. It'll work out. Like and I have that mentality with things. I think most men listening would probably agree with that. We'd be like, yeah, it'll work. It'll buff out. But
I totally get that on class 3 and below. If it's above class 3, I got to check myself. I have to. Like, yeah.
Even though hearing, like, you get fired up talking about it there, and you mentioned it earlier, like, I was addicted. What led to that? I get, like, there was that conversation, but this is, you know, I'm a year and a half sober here from rampant alcoholism, and I've seen this a lot in talking about recovery, and even myself, like, I made myself incredibly busy, especially for like the first 6 months of me getting sober. I just had to fill every minute of my time. And you see this a lot, whether it's been other people that I've had on the show that are addicts or alcoholics, where you replace an addiction with something else that is an actual productive and like positive addiction to something, but it is still displaying those addictive tendencies just in a more healthy lane. Did this replace something for you? Or because that does, the level of getting hooked on that is pretty bonkers.
Yeah, well, there's kind of two facets to this. So I'm a very type A person. I love spreadsheets and I love checklists and I love checking things off. I get a lot of positive energy doing that. Even when like, okay, I don't want to do all these household chores, but if I make a list, oh, I'm checking those off and I'm getting them done and I feel good about myself. However, during this time when this was all happening, I was going through a very difficult divorce. And so difficult that Child Protective Services came in and made me choose between my husband and my kids because my husband was the problem. And my lawyer said, okay, he's got supervised visitation 1 day a month. you need to allow him that. You can't text him. You can't text your kids. That is what he is given. He's got this many hours. And I needed to get away where I couldn't be a part of that. I am a mama bear parent, and I want to keep my kids safe. And I know this man is not safe. I do know it's supervised visitation. I can't be involved in that. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to where I can't ruin that relationship he's trying to build with the children or trying to restore what he's done wrong. I can't be a part of that. And a lot of this was happening at the same time. So it was like one weekend a month, not the whole weekend, because it was supervised and he had to bring him back home every night. I needed to get away so that I wasn't interfering with my children and their father.
And this was, I mean, what a way to get out the excess energy, like the anxiety of that. That is freaking nuts.
Can I talk to that? Like, I was mad. I was mad at the situation. I was mad at myself. Yeah. I was mad at my ex. I had a lot of nasty thoughts going through my head, right? Like, I was mad. And if I went on this hike that took 7 hours in the middle of nowhere by myself, I could say all those nasty things to myself. I could say all those things I wanted to say that were not appropriate, work through them, cry like crazy, and then get to a point where I'm like, okay, this is what I want to do, but is that the adult thing? Is that what's best for my children? No, this is how I should react to it. I was able to work through it and be a better parent, especially during a divorce, a very difficult divorce, where I could be more positive. I never said anything negative about my ex to my kids. I did while I was hiking. I said it to myself several times. I said it to the trees. I said it to whatever animals I saw, but my kids didn't see that. I could come back home and be a supportive parent. And that was huge for me. Just the clarity and being a good person, but allowing myself to still experience all those negative emotions.
Yeah. And I think that's something people miss a lot. You know, people definitely miss the value of exercise and overall health, but as specifically as an outlet when you're going through stuff, whether it's depression or like this, where you're in like a very stressful, very, I'm sure, emotionally tumultuous time as well. Like, absolutely exhausting yourself in addition to getting, you know, you having that time to actually process that, but just the exertion of that, like that does so much good for you in releasing some of those demons that you need to actually let blow off a little bit and kind of recenter yourself. But so in that 13 months where you climbed all of the 58 14ers, that was during that time.
It was. And in fact, I didn't set out to do that. I didn't set out to do them that quickly. In fact, I could have done them much quicker if my mom hadn't kind of, she didn't forbid me, but she really, really, really asked me not to go in winter. So I did a bunch in the fall and then I waited until spring and then finished the rest. I realize now that I had the skills to do it and I learned myself not to live my life through somebody else's fears. Just because my mom is afraid for me to go, if I have the skills to do it and I have the skills to turn back, I should at least attempt it, right? Like, I'm not afraid to solo. I'm good. I've gotten myself out of a lot of terrible situations because I've got the skills. I could have done them much faster had I not tried to be such a good daughter to my mom. And that has turned around. She eventually came around to understanding that this is a passion of mine and I know what I'm doing and I will be okay. And she's used my experiences now as like intrinsic motivation to do stuff. Like, she was in Hawaii and she's not old, but she's older. And she got swept out by a current in the water when she was swimming. And she had like 300 yards she had to swim back. And she was scared, right? She didn't know that she could make it. And she tells me that she just kept thinking, oh, my daughter does all this stuff by herself. If she can do it, I can do it. And she kept going and she ended up making it to shore. So like now she's okay with me going solo because she gets it. She gets it. Sometimes you have to self-rescue and you have to know how to do it and have the right mindset. And she's all good with it.
It was funny because as you started talking, that's specifically when you went into well, I could have done it faster. Like I could hear your competitiveness, even though it was competitiveness with yourself. But like, and it's just it makes so much sense. Like
Yes,
you've
yeah.
got this drive inside of you, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, the if you just look at the numbers there, that is impressive. But that indicates that like the character and the drive in that person, and that just
Well,
it's
yeah.
admirable, obviously.
And
But go ahead.
now I average 150 peaks a year. It was 58 that first year, and now I average 150.
That is
So,
so
yeah.
stupid. That
Like,
is crazy. Yeah, it's
I
just,
held myself back.
yeah. And that's, I mean, I know you lead trips, like, but it sounds like that was as a passion. Do you do any of this professionally at this point? I know you have a book, and we'll get into all of that, but are you, is this all passion at this point, or is it some of this professional?
It's all passion. I do it all at this point on a volunteer basis, mainly to keep people safe. If somebody asks me if I would help them with something, I'm going to say yes. It's like, especially if I know them, they have a goal. For a lot of people, summiting a mountain, a 14er especially, any 14er, is a lifelong goal for them. And they want to do it, but they want to do it safely. And to me, most of the 14ers are easy. They're easy, easy, easy. Why wouldn't I spend my time helping somebody who this is their lifelong goal? They're going to remember this for the rest of their life. And it's going to be a big deal, a really big accomplishment. And it is. It is a very big accomplishment. The first time I did Pikes Peak, I was on top of the world. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I rock, right? That feeling. I want everybody else to feel that feeling. And especially if I have a friend or an acquaintance that wants to do it, I'm taking them up. I'm giving them that feeling. And talking to them along the way, giving them as much of the skills I know to help them to maybe give them the confidence to do it on their own or to do it again or to continue doing stuff outdoors. And a lot of that for me is just the way we preserve all these areas for people, like all of our state and land areas that are free access for us to go to, is to get many, many people to love going to them. And to love respecting them and taking care of them so that we can all enjoy them.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's national parks. All of those things are obviously dependent
Yes.
on the support of the nation actually utilizing them. And that's that money attending to get into the trailheads or into the park or whatever is what pays to preserve the wildlife there and everything else. But with, do you have any aspiration to do, like, I just, an episode that just came out 2 weeks ago was with another blind guy that I know who's working a hill. Be finishing the seven summits this year. Like, do you
Oh,
have
wow.
any aspiration to go abroad and do this stuff?
I've done peaks in other countries. I'm not interested in the Seven Summits particularly, only because Everest is now too crowded. And not just that, but I have Raynaud's, which means I am susceptible to frostbite really, really early. I have to keep myself moving. I have to keep going. I can't work on somebody else's time schedule. I don't work well with a guide, mainly because I'm faster than my guides and I can't slow down or my body shuts down. And looking at Everest and how you have 400 people waiting to summit in one day, I wouldn't summit because I'd be standing in line and my body would shut down. That's just it. I cannot, my body cannot keep itself warm if I'm standing still.
Yeah, what was it called? La Knots? Is that what you said?
Oh, it's called Raynaud's, and
Okay.
it's a problem. It's an autoimmune disorder, and the easiest way to say it is I get extra cold really, really quickly. So if I'm taking other people on a hike, if I'm leading them and it's really cold and they need a break, I am running circles around them. I cannot stop. Once I stop, I'm done. My body is done. It's even in 70 degree weather, I can get hypothermia. I can get mild frostbite. My body
What?
sucks in that way. It sucks. So if I could guarantee that I could climb Everest with nobody else there, totally, I'd be all about doing it. But it doesn't work that way, right? Like that's not the way it works. You're there with several other groups and they're all looking at the same weather window and nobody's really taking turns. You're all going at the same time because you've been there for how many months and people are paying so much in order to get this summit. And that's not really a goal of mine, especially since so many people do it. my goal is to get out there and have fun and enjoy nature and to stay alive. Like,
that's
on
a
my
good
own
goal.
Terms.
Staying alive is a good goal with it. Do you do any other endurance sports, like specific, like, are you a marathon runner or anything?
Oh, I don't run. No, I power walk. I walk with a purpose. I hike very fast, but I do not run. No, I appreciate people who do. And in fact, trail runners, I bow down to them. They are amazing. I don't know how they do it. That's not what I do. I've got a pack on me that weighs more than it should because I teach wilderness first aid and first responder classes, and I am a role model to a lot of girls out there through Girl Scouts, and I cannot be unprepared. Now, my pack's not heavy, but I'm wearing a pack. I'm not going out there with just water running, because if something did happen to me and I wasn't prepared, that would be a really, really bad example, and I don't want to be the bad example. So I'm wearing a little more weight. I'm probably averaging 3 miles an hour, which isn't bad when you've got about 1,000 feet of elevation gain an hour, but I'm not running. That's not what I'm doing.
It's still, I would bet that your engine from all of that could go run a marathon. I'm sure, you know, there would be some time for some skeletal and muscular adjustment too, but like I bet you could go crush a marathon.
Okay, I have to tell you, the reason I don't run is that one time I was at the gym and I decided to run on a treadmill and I liked it too much. I get addicted to things like this and I didn't need another addiction. I was like, nope. I enjoyed it too much. And I'm like, nope, can't do this because I don't need another addiction. I've already got one. Let's focus on that one. Maybe when the 13ers are over, we'll look at that. But not now.
So I can hear it when you talk. Yeah. You're like, no, I power walk. And I was like, you talk like you power walk. You talk like you're power walking right now. It's just, it's funny. You just sound like you're just, I mean, it's obviously passion, but you seem like an intense person. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Everything I do is fast. I try. And in fact, I am trying to slow my cadence down and it's obviously not working. So yeah.
No, it's fine. It's just, it's funny. You know, I don't know how much of it is just from being blind and like, you know, picking up on little, so I can't see body language or whatever, but just I pick up on little stuff like that. I get pictures and I was like, yeah, I can see you power walking with some ankle weights on right now. You're just cruising around. But so how'd the book come about?
Okay. So my book, it's called Wild Wanderer, Soloing Colorado's 200 Highest Peaks. And a lot of people read the title and think it's a guidebook. Like they think it's going to be all the routes to go up the peaks. And that's not what it is. I have a website. My website is free. It's got detailed written descriptions of every peak. You can't get lost. And for people that this works for, pictures, I'm a visual person, so pictures work well for me. The book is stories. And I wrote it because so many people said, you have so many amazing stories. You need to write a book. And I didn't want to write a book because that wasn't kind of my jam. But so many people asked me to that I took all my stories and put them into a book. So my wild animal encounters, these are campfire stories. They're not, I mean, a sixth grader could read it and enjoy it. They're me falling into a frozen pond. They're hallucinations I had while on the trail. They're real life ghost stories. Just what happened and how I went from being a mom, right, that was troubled and having a hard time, to a really confident mountaineer, and the journey in that process, how that happened, how I learned to trust myself and my abilities and learn to turn back and go, okay, don't got this, and keep going, and pretty much life lessons along the way. It's a fun book, I think. Everybody that reads it, it's 375 pages. And most people come back and say, I read it in a weekend. It was amazing. When are you going to write another one? Like, well, at this point, I have so many more stories. Like I wrote that at 200 peaks and I have over 600 now. I kind of wish I would have waited because I've got a lot more stories to tell. Fun stuff. Human interactions, animal interactions, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I wrote it basically, long story short, because everybody asked me to. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Well, the good news is now you can do another one with the hundreds of other peaks that you've gotten now, if you feel so inclined to take on that grind again.
It'll happen in a different way, but yeah, once I finish the 13ers, I'll probably write another one, just the other, all these other stories, everything else that's happened, and the good and the bad. And that's just, there's a lot of bad, but learning from the bad, right? Like making mistakes, falling into a frozen pond and you're 8 miles from the trailhead and there's snow everywhere. What do you do?
Yeah, did
It's a
you
fun
actually
story.
string the stories together in a cohesive narrative, or are they kind of one-off?
Okay, yes to both. You could read each story by itself and it's a complete story, but it's growth and progression, and it is from where I started to where I ended. If you were to pick up a story in the middle, it would be a great story. If you read them all the way through, you see the progression, you see the growth and the decision making and all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. How long ago did that come out?
May of 2022. So it's about 3 years. 3 years ago, I
Okay.
wrote that.
Awesome. How's it been doing?
It's doing really well. I get a lot of positive feedback. I would actually like a little bit of negative because I haven't had any negative, and that would help me with writing the next book. But everybody that reads it loves it. So that's great, right? That's great. It's a good thing.
That's always, yeah. Did you, and I get that, like with things, I'm like, all right, if people are just telling me positives, I feel like some of these people are lying to me or leaving out the negative.
Right.
Like, yeah, I
Yes.
can't,
Yes.
that kind of invalidates all the positive that's been said because there hasn't been the negative. But did you self-publish that?
I did. Yes.
Okay,
And I've
awesome.
had several publishers ask me if they can publish it. And at this point, I don't want that. I've had a lot of people ask if they can sponsor me. And that's not my goal with doing all this. I'm not looking to make a whole bunch of money or anything. I want to do it on my own terms. I don't want somebody funding it, because then I've got to kind of bend to whatever their values are. And I don't want to do that. I want to do it all on my own terms. And when I'm done, I'll process everything else. But I wanted to do it on my own and not have to worry about somebody else telling me I could or could not do something.
Well, and also you having done that, you still own all of that. You know, people don't realize if you sign with a publisher, you lose the rights to your own story. Like that's huge. That's kind of a big deal, especially with something that's so personal, right? You're not writing a research, a book on a certain subject that you've spent a bunch of time researching. Like this is very different, but
Yeah, and
that's.
I actually wrote it more for a legacy for my family. When everybody's saying, "Hey, why don't you write these stories? Why don't you write it?" I thought about my kids, and I'm like, "Well, if I do end up dying at some point on one of these peaks, you know, God forbid, that's not my goal." But it, I mean, Mother Nature doesn't really care, and sometimes you get in situations that you couldn't prepare for, and that happens. I wanted my kids and my grandkids to read my stories, so I wrote it more as a family legacy and a friend legacy than a multi-million dollar movie contract kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want them to know what I went through.
Gonna get dark here, but you just said it, so I'm gonna ask it.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's with the idea, and you've mentioned this a couple times, you know, that if I die, or so that preparing, you know, doing my best not to die. Like, have you actually thought about that a lot specifically? And like, it's just something that that's a risk that you're willing to take, or is it something that like you just go in as prepared as possible, but haven't, you know, like that's, I feel like being like, yeah, this is a risk I'm willing to take versus having thought about like the most morbid extent of that. Like, have you had close calls that have left you actually thinking about death itself?
I absolutely have. And I've had conversations with my kids what to happen or what they should do if I do die. Now they're all adults now. I've had that conversation with them. I am uber safe on everything that I do, as safe as I can be. I mean, it's more dangerous statistically for me to drive to the trailhead than it is for me to hike the peak, right? I mean, just it is. So I could die at any time. And I've come to terms with turning back. Turning back is always the right answer, and I do it a lot. But there could be something that happens. It's happened to me several times. I've been in freak thunderstorms. I've been in freak snowstorms. I've fallen into frozen ponds. I've had wild animals that, you know, didn't really attack me, but that I sure felt like they were going to. At that point, what am I going to do? It doesn't matter if I'm there with three or four people. If a wild animal's attacking you, that's it. Like, that's it. Or if there's an avalanche and you're with a bunch of people, you all get swept down. That's it. I'm not going to live my life not adventuring and not experiencing it, because what I've made out of my life is amazing to me. And I've come to terms with, if I did die tomorrow, I lived a really good life. I am a good person. I've done a lot to give back to society. My kids are all doing great. They're wonderful adults. I have wonderful relationships, wonderful friends. Do I want to die? Absolutely not. I'm going to do everything I can not to. But if I were to, I can't say I lived a bad life. I can't say I have regrets. I live my life with no regrets. A lot of people haven't done a tenth of what I've done and aren't enjoying their lives. I have enjoyed my life. Don't take unnecessary risks, but living is an unnecessary risk. Driving, taking a train, you know, traveling, all that stuff is an unnecessary risk, but the benefits out of it are amazing. I'm not going to give up the benefits because I'm scared that something could potentially happen.
Yeah, and that's that choosing to live rather than just existing. Like, yes, that sounds cliche, but that if anyone just scoffed at that, that is a very real thing. And if you're scoffing at it, you're probably one of the people that's just existing and not living. Like, you know, usually when I'm having these kinds of conversations with people about other stuff and, you know, offline of a podcast, but it's usually when there's weird reactions to, you know, controlled risks, right? You're doing what you can to
mitigate those risks. Yeah.
But even in a conversation where that is the case and you get these weird reactions, I'm like, all right, you're probably miserable. You probably don't have a very fun life, and that's why you're scoffing at this, right? You're just dismissing it instead of actually stopping and realizing, like, are you maximizing or extracting the most value out of this incredible opportunity that you have on this rock hurling through space, spinning at incredible speeds around a burning ball of hydrogen?
Can you mentally get through that? Like, I've had miserable nights. I've had nights where I was freezing cold or I was wet or just terrible, terrible nights. But I always know this is going to be a great story later. Like, yeah, I'm scared in the moment and I'm not happy with this, but it's going to be a great story. I'm going to be able to make it through and be proud of what I did. And that's going to inspire somebody else to get through it, not to, you know, cower down and die, but let's go, let's make this happen. Let's get through it. And how did I get through it? And it's mostly mental. Everything is mental. Your body can do way more than you think it can. Your mind is what limits you from actually doing it. Yeah. You talk yourself into, this stinks. This sucks. I'm not happy. I've been through there in a lot of places in my life where I'm just low, really, really low. And I've learned that getting out there and doing things, especially on the days I don't want to, the days I really don't want to hike are the days I need to hike. And I get, you know, an hour into it and the endorphins start flowing and I feel better about life and my choices. And I mean, we all make mistakes. We all have really big regrets. I don't know anybody that doesn't have tremendous regrets. Got to work through them. And for me, being out in nature helps me work through them. Maybe not make those same mistakes again, but be a better person.
Yeah. And this is, I feel like I had heard this phrase before, but I just heard it this last week. I was at an event with Wounded Warrior Project, and there was a gentleman there, his name was Bruce, and he'd been exposed to sarin gas, which is a nerve agent, while he was in Iraq, and has, on top of spinal injuries, is kind of having a tough time from that exposure and everything else that he experienced at war. But he was telling his story. He's been an active guy his whole life, and then was specifically, you know, for a time there, he lost the ability to do everything, even though physicality was everything about his life. And he was talking about now, like, loving these experiences, like you talked about, you know, in the military, we call it like embrace the suck. And it's always those shittiest times when those are the times that you look back on fondly. But he was calling that type two fun. Like type one
Yes.
fun is I'm
Yes.
on a roller coaster, and but type two fun is this is hell right now. But once this is over, this is going to be one of my favorite memories.
Yep. That transfers into mountaineering. We call it type two fun as well. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I love that. And it's so accurate though. Like that is, it's a totally different type of fun, but it is almost more valuable on the back end. But
and you got to keep that in the back of your head. Yeah, this sucks right now, right? This sucks right now. But what a great story it's going to be when this is over. You just, that's how your mindset has to be to get yourself through whatever it is you're going through at the time. Just, I'm going to make it through this and we're going to have a story to tell.
Yeah.
And hopefully inspire others.
Yeah, and I would imagine you probably, do you regularly hear from other women who have been inspired to take this stuff up after seeing what you've done?
I get a lot of emails and I'm very open. So whenever I meet somebody on a trail or I do a lot of talks and speaking engagements, I say, hey, you can do this. Send me an email and tell me what you're into and I'll send you places you can go. I'll send you GPX files. You can absolutely do this. Do you want to see a waterfall? Do you have kids? Do you have a dog? What kind of trail do you want? Get out there and have fun. And I get a lot of people that ask me, which is great. That's what I want. I want to get more people outdoors. It to me, it's so healing. Everybody should experience it. It just is. And yeah, I get a lot of women that respond like, thank you so much for responding to me and you inspire me and I'm willing to do this. And I always kind of caveat it with, okay, if you're going to do this, you should take a wilderness first aid class. You should know how to protect yourself. I've got several videos and podcasts and I've written a lot of stuff about how to stay safe, how to the 10 essentials and how to be safe in the outdoors and how to protect yourself when you're solo and all that kind of stuff. If you can educate yourself, you feel so much more empowered to do it, to get out there and experience nature. And it's an amazing, uplifting experience just to be out there, just listening to everything. Every morning I'm hiking, I hike really early in the morning. And my favorite time of the morning is like 4:30 to 5. It depends on the time of year, but right now that's about the time of year when all the birds are waking up and you hear them talking to each other and you hear the squirrels, you know, chatting to each other through the trees. And that's nature and that's calming. And to me, that's freaking amazing. Like that's the best part of the morning is just listening, being out there and listening to nature.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the world waking up around you. Like most people rarely get to experience that. If you live in a city, you don't get to experience that. Like it's just, it's beautiful. It really is. Like even I moved out of Denver into the burbs about 2 years ago. And now around that time in the mornings, I get with my windows open, you just hear all the birds going to town. And it is so, I don't know if I appreciate it more because I'm older or if I can't see or what, but it's my favorite time in the morning. And so there's something primal about it. But I was sitting here thinking again as you were getting intense, like describing some of this stuff. Do you have something that's very like anything like crocheting or something that you do just as intensely as this or what?
You just said that. Yes, crocheting is exactly it. So I don't sit well. I don't sit well at all. And I probably made 4 Afghans this year. And by Afghans, I mean like king size bed and not king size, cow king size bed already this year. I've got 4 different projects going on. One's in my truck, one's in my trailer. We have a ranch out in Fairplay and we have property out in Fairplay. We have yaks, we have alpacas. We're building a ranch.
Jeez.
We've got an orchard and a vineyard. So I've got one there. And then I do own a home in Colorado Springs. So I've got another one there and I travel for work a lot. So I've got another smaller one in my travel bag, but yeah, crocheting is what keeps me sane when I can't be doing, I have to stay active. I have to be doing something. And yeah. You nailed
that
it on the head right there.
So funny, but it checks out. It totally checks out with like that just made me feel like, ah, oh, this is complete now. But I guess so you've got, gosh, Oh, geez. So obviously all the 14ers, that's been done for a while. What'd you say? There's 158 13ers.
No, there's 584.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
And I have
So,
about 80 left to go to finish those.
and is that, I mean, I'm again, just even based off what you just said, I'm imagining there's probably another goal after that. I mean, what is timeline here? What I know you have to have a list of this after everything else that you've already told me. Like, when are you expecting to be done with all of that? And then what's next in your mind? Because I know there has to be something.
All right, so I've got about 80 13ers left to go, and most of those are very difficult to get to. So it's not that I couldn't do them, I just can't get to them
Oh,
to do them. I
okay.
wanted to finish them this year, but realistically, it's probably going to be 2 years before I get that done. My other real big passions are Girl Scouts. Even though I don't have a child in Girl Scouts anymore, my kids are all older. I volunteer a lot with our local troops. I teach outdoor survival skills. I teach Red Cross Wilderness First Aid. I will spend a lot more time doing that. I'm also a cookie cupboard. So during Girl Scout cookie time, I have two semi trucks come to my house twice a week and I get
What?
20,000 cases of cookies and I give them to the troop leaders in order to distribute to the girls. That's another volunteer thing I love to do. And also, I just said we just bought property. We're building a ranch. Our goal is to have 20,000 pheasants next year and start raising those. We already have yaks and alpacas. And then this place that we just bought is really close to about 15 14ers. And I would love to start guiding. So I would love to take people, especially I'm close to the easier 14ers, like the one class ones and class twos. I would love to
Okay.
take people up and give them the confidence to do it on their own. So once I finish, I'll still be climbing. I'm not doing the 12ers. I'm not doing the 11ers. I'm in a different stage of life. I've got a goal to finish with the 13ers, and then I just really want to inspire others to get out there and do it.
That is so cool. That ranch, I mean, on its own sounds like it's freaking awesome, but also being within touching distance of all the 14, like for you, sounds like that will be heaven on earth.
Yes, I can see them all from my house. I hike here every day. I can't hike in the mountains. And I just look at all these peaks and I'm like, I am so blessed. I am so blessed to be out in nature and even just sitting outside at night and, like, once again, just like in the morning at night, listening to the birds and all nature around me and not cars and people and honking and all that stuff. It's just nature. I can just
Well, and
listen.
without the light pollution, you actually get to see the real sky at night, which is just mesmerizing.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. So I know, obviously, tell everybody the name of your book again. You'd mentioned your website earlier, but you didn't actually say where it is. And I'll have links to this stuff. But so if someone's listening, they can jot this down.
Okay. So my book is Wild Wanderer, Soloing Colorado's 200 Highest Peaks. My website, which I need to say this again, is all free. And I want to keep it free as long as possible because I want everybody to enjoy the outdoors. I have over 600 trip reports for peaks out in Colorado that are accessible, that show you how accessible they are. They talk about the class difficulty and all that kind of stuff. That's wildwanderertripreports.com. And there's a contact button on there. If you contact me with questions, I will absolutely get back to you. It might take me a week. You can't text me or message me at Friday at 9 in the morning, expect me to get back to you for a weekend hike because I don't have service most of the time. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to go August 18th and it's July something, yeah, I will absolutely give you a ton of information. I want to see you outdoors. And if you're on Instagram, I'm at Laura_M_Clark. And I usually just post information about the peak I just did, just what it looks like right now. That's more of a mountaineering site where people that are looking for conditions can get not just visuals, but updated information. Like I needed snowshoes or I needed crampons or all that kind of stuff. But I love to keep people safe and I love to help people. So I love it when people contact me because I want you out there. And I want you experiencing stuff, but I want to keep you safe.
That's awesome. What else? Have I missed anything here?
I think that's it, but I've had a lot of fun talking with you. You're an awesome person.
Yeah, thank you.
Great
I'm
questions.
So glad Dave connected us. I got to stop saying this. I say this with every episode, but I mean it. Like I'm always excited to come on here and do them, and this has been no exception. So thank you for taking the time. Thank you for calling from your trailhead. And yeah, thanks everyone at home for listening to another episode of Going In Blind. Remember to rate and review the show wherever you listened, and then share this around with a curious mind who needs to hear it.